While the field of Democratic contenders to be the next governor of New York is still being set, it appears that at least one of the dividing lines between candidates could be legislation increasing state protections for tenants facing eviction, which is described by proponents as the good cause eviction measure. In light of this renewed political relevance, we're checking in with the measure's Senate sponsor, Brooklyn Democrat Julia Salazar. Welcome to the show, Senator, and it's great to see you in person.
Thanks, as always, for having me, Dave.
It's our pleasure. So can you walk us through the protections afforded by the so-called good cause eviction bill and how this would impact the relationship between tenants and their landlords?
Yes. So right now, there are more than a million tenant households across the state who live without any real legal protections against an eviction or an affordable rent increase at the end of their lease. What the good cause eviction bill would do is provide a rebuttable presumption in court for what is or is not considered good cause to evict a tenant, barring certain situations such as owner's use situations, which already exist under the law, and cases where there's a small property, four units or less, where the owner lives. In all other cases, if the property owner tried to increase the rent by either 3% of the current rent or previous rent, or 1.5 times the consumer price index, also known as the rate of inflation, whichever is a higher amount, currently that would be 1.5 times the CPI, If the property owner tried to increase the tenant's rent by that much or higher, there would be a rebuttable presumption in court that it would be in considered an unconscionable rent increase, and the landlord would be prevented from raising the rent by more than that amount on the tenant. Often, even when a tenant has always paid their rent on time, it's not a non-payment case or a nuisance case, right? These would be considered good cause under the law for eviction. Mm-hmm. But in these other cases where people are just trying to survive, they're paying their rent on time, a property owner could use a massive rent increase to de facto evict a tenant. And this is something that is becoming increasingly difficult. We've certainly seen it in the pandemic. The legislature has intervened and passed temporary measures and then extended those temporary measures, the eviction moratorium in particular. But this isn't really sustainable. We can't just keep every 6 months or so extending an eviction moratorium. We think it's important to protect these tenant households that, unlike in places like the city of New York, have very little or virtually no legal protections from losing their homes.
So it sounded like the number you threw out was about a million New Yorkers or a million tenants who would benefit from this. Are they primarily tenants or renters outside of New York City, or do some of them exist within certain situations in New York City as well?
It's definitely both. Mm-hmm. The good cause eviction legislation would disproportionately help tenants outside of New York City, but that's really because we have a decent rent regulation system in place in New York City, whereas many other localities do not. But this would also help New Yorkers in the city who live outside of rent regulation, even those who maybe their building or their unit previously was rent regulated, but it was removed from regulation before we strengthened the rent laws in 2019 to prevent that from happening.
And the circumstances in which you envision a tenant being protected, how common are those type of instances, say, where a landlord wants to increase rent dramatically, or they're just simply looking to change tenants for no good reason? Is this something that happens on a regular basis, or is it limited, again, say, to urban areas like New York City, where housing is in demand, and you can really, if you're a landlord, choose who's going to live there and how much they're going to pay?
It used to be, at least the idea was that this phenomenon was more limited to New York City or major cities. But we have increasingly heard from tenants, even people who were displaced from New York City, moved further up in the Hudson Valley, And they're having to move again and again because it's increasingly happening mm-hmm. outside of New York City. I think it's more frequently an issue with corporate landlords than it is for, you know, your so-called mom and pop landlords. But it's definitely an issue affecting renters across the state. And that has been demonstrated by the calls to pass local, the local equivalent of good cause eviction legislation in localities across the state. Three cities have already passed right. a local version of the legislation.
Yeah, I think Albany, Hudson, and Newburgh, the city of Kingston, I guess, is considering it. Why isn't that the right approach then to enacting these protections? Why not say, if you're a community where you think this is worth considering, you think the situation in your community would benefit from this, why not let those local leaders take the charge on this? Why do we need a state protection?
I think we would see a more stable housing market if we enact this policy statewide rather than trying to do it piecemeal the way that it's done right now. I certainly don't think that localities should be prohibited from implementing, you know, stricter rent regulation as the Urstadt law dictates for New York City, for example.
Can you explain what that is?
Yes. So in 1971, a law was passed in New York State called the Urstadt Law, which prohibits New York City specifically from enacting stricter rent regulation or rent laws than what is mandated at the state level.
Okay.
And so therefore, in New York City, the city council has a popular resolution in support of the good cause eviction bill, but it would be illegal for the city council to enact good cause or any other legislation that regulates rent more strictly than the state laws do.
In case you're just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're speaking with the Senate author of the state's so-called good cause eviction legislation, Brooklyn Democrat Julia Salazar. So why then would it be beneficial in terms of the housing market more broadly to attack this at the state level? What would be the consequence, say, of in the Capital Region, for example, Albany having good cause protections, but neighboring Troy and Schenectady not having it? Would there be potential fallout from that?
I think that it is possible, at least that we would see an impact. We don't want cities' housing markets, I think, especially if they're that close to each other, to be competing in that way. And certainly we don't really want to create a situation where people are unsure about their rights because in the locality next door, tenants are afforded much stronger rights than they would be, you know, in Troy versus Albany.
I want to deviate just because of what you mentioned there about understanding your rights, because in 2019, there was a big package of tenant protection measures that were adopted by the state legislature, the good cause eviction, not one of them. We can talk about that in a second. But do you feel like the current landscape of protections is understood by tenants, or do you feel like there are landlords, maybe those corporate landlords that we talked about, or other entities in the housing landscape who are able to basically get around some of the existing protections because tenants might not know everything that's out there? And are there certain protections and benefits that you are finding are repeatedly things that tenants or other housing people are unaware of?
Definitely. It's the latter. I think that we, as legislators, could be doing a better job of adequately resourcing the agencies that are responsible for protecting tenants' rights, such as the Tenant Protection Unit, which only is, gosh, it's like a staff of several dozen people for the entire state, I think, at this point.
Right.
Yeah, right, right. And we're talking, you know, millions of tenants. The majority of people in the state, technically, or at least the majority of households, are tenant households. And so, you know, it's not proportionate at all to the representation or resources that tenants are given to know their rights and to stand up for themselves. Frequently, even if someone, if a tenant knows their rights, they don't necessarily want to litigate or go to housing court. It's an intimidating situation for a tenant, especially. But I think that we should be putting more resources into protecting the rights that already exist, especially those that were strengthened just 2 years ago that many people may not be aware of.
Well, returning to those local initiatives, is there anything that you can learn or co-opt from those experiences, either in terms of the politics surrounding their passage or whether there's any data that you'll be able to collect about those laws and their implementation, or because they're just going to affect now, is it unlikely that on the data side of things you'll have anything useful, say, for a 2022 legislative push?
It will be, I think, challenging to glean meaningful data from to look at the impact. What we do know is that the sky has not fallen. The fear mongering about negative impacts of rent regulation has gone on for more than a century, actually, from the opponents of rent regulation, and they fear mongered again in 2019. And we know that there's absolutely no evidence that stronger rent laws has had any negative impact on the housing market. But apart from that, in looking toward this legislative fight on good cause, I think that we should reflect on how we were able to win quite strong rent regulations in 2019 and eliminate some of the loopholes. And to me, the most meaningful part of that process was that the state Senate and the state assembly focused on negotiating with each other. And ultimately, the governor actually walked away from those negotiations.
Right then, Governor Andrew Cuomo.
Andrew Cuomo, yes. So former governor walked away from negotiations. And because the two houses were not being pitted against each other, which often happens in negotiating major legislation, we were able to renew the rent laws on time and strengthen them. And the governor was in a position where he really just had to sign it, even though I don't think he would have wanted to see us strengthen the rent laws as much as we did.
And after a quick break, we'll continue our conversation with State Senator Julia Salazar about her legislation that would implement a system of so-called good cause eviction in New York.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
In case you're just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're continuing our conversation with State Senator Julia Salazar, a Brooklyn Democrat who sponsors legislation that would create a system of so-called good cause eviction for all tenants in New York. So New York Attorney General Letitia James, who wants to be the state's next governor, has called for the passage of good cause eviction in the past and reiterated her support recently, which really thrust the issue back into the spotlight. How would you like to see her help this bill along, if at all, or has she already done everything that you would like to see from her?
I think that continuing to speak out is really important. I remember in 2019 when we were holding legislative hearings all around the state in different cities on the rent laws, Letitia James, she testified at one of those hearings in support and explicitly urged us to pass the good cause eviction bill. It's just that in these past 2 years, I think she hasn't been in as much of a role, wasn't campaigning for one, to be publicly taking a stance on good cause. So this is definitely welcome and I think helpful in putting pressure on the current governor, for one, on Governor Hochul, and also on any other candidates in the race who are even going to claim to care about housing justice, that it should be a sort of a benchmark for candidates who are seeking to lead our state. And also, I think it just they have a bully pulpit. And so it's important for the Attorney General to use her position to advocate for this as well.
Do you think 2022 will ultimately be different than 2019 in terms of the fate of good cause? And if so, why?
I'm hopeful that we'll see progress this year. It's always difficult for me to, or in the upcoming session, to quantify the likelihood of it passing. But I'm very much encouraged by the legislation passing in Hudson and Newburgh and in the city of Albany, even passing unanimously in Hudson, for example, with the mayors of each of these localities supporting. I've seen how local state lawmakers in those localities, their position on good cause has changed, and they've become supportive, seeing their constituents at the hyperlocal level support the bill and explain to them why we desperately need this. So that's encouraging to me. I think that what was different in 2019 is that the other bills that passed, we were really demanding essentially that 9 bills would pass in 2019 that were all about affecting the rent laws. Good cause was the only one of those bills that was brand new legislation. It had never been introduced in some other form, unlike the other bills. So legislators were more familiar with the other bills. The other bills, with the exception of one, also exclusively applied to New York City and or areas where there was rent regulation. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it has taken a little bit of time for lawmakers to reckon with what good cause would mean, more time for us to do political education about the implications of the bill. And now we're in a stronger place than we were in 2019 in advocating for it to actually become law.
Progressive housing advocates have indicated that this legislation is going to be one of the benchmarks they use to decide which lawmakers, Democratic lawmakers presumably, could face primary challenges from the left. Do you think that is going to be a good motivating factor for some of the rank and file members of the majorities in both houses?
I think it's a reasonable motivating factor, and that generally legislators know our respective districts, and it's really going to be up to constituents to demonstrate to these legislators that we need good cause, and for them to see the people who would be impacted by this to such a degree that legislators won't be able to dismiss it as a New York City issue, which we know is not the case, and for them to say, oh, I don't represent that many tenants. We do have the data that demonstrates that isn't true. And I think that it should really motivate legislators to support good cause, the support that they're seeing in their districts and all over the state.
When we've talked with Assembly Health Committee Chair Dick Gottfried about the New York Health Act, which is a bill that would be a sweeping state takeover of health insurance, he has revealed to us that he's aware of co-sponsors of the bill who, in some cases, privately work to undermine the bill. Your bill has a lot of Democratic sponsors, and I'm curious whether you're aware of any people working behind the scenes who, on the face of things, are with you, but privately are trying to undermine things. Because, you know, the bill didn't even get a committee vote this past session. So are there two-faced senators and assembly members?
It's certainly possible. I generally have to take people at their word and also really urge people to demonstrate their commitment with more than a co-sponsorship, by coming to hearings on the legislation, by coming to town halls in their communities, sort of keeping the pressure on legislators who maybe haven't been that enthusiastic about the bill, or who we're not sure are really strong supporters of the bill, to mean what they say, and to make sure that it actually is brought to a vote in committee in each house. It's in the Judiciary Committee in the State Senate, mm-hmm. Rather than Housing, actually, and in the Housing Committee in the Assembly. But I think that we do need to make sure, in particular, the members of the committees understand the legislation, and that those who say that they support it are pushing for a committee vote.
Well, speaking of people who support it, because Attorney General Letitia James has been vocal about her support, and because Governor Kathy Hochul has really made just tepid endorsements of keeping people in their homes more generally, would you like to endorse Letitia James for governor at this point?
I shouldn't do it right at this very moment, but I am really inspired by the Attorney General's work and her run for governor. And I'm definitely grateful that she has used her position to come out in support of good cause. And I hope that it'll motivate every gubernatorial candidate, including the incumbent, to come out and support as well.
So we're having this conversation about housing and the relationship between tenants and landlords through an existing framework where landlords are basically running for-profit businesses. Instead of regulating in that context, should we be thinking about a different framework for our housing? For example, should nonprofits be stepping into this space? Or is there some other solution that someone smarter than me is thinking about? Or are you content with the way we work now and we just need regulations that are appropriate for both sides involved?
I think that the strongest way to protect people is definitely by changing the law first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And through regulation, there is a role for nonprofits. We've seen through the ERAP program, for example, nonprofits playing a critical role in helping people apply and secure rent relief, landlords and tenants alike, as well as in applying for relief through the Excluded Workers Fund. Nonprofit organizations, local community organizations have played a critical role in helping people get the relief that they need and advocating for people who might not otherwise have access to these things. So I think no matter what, the community leaders that people trust are going to continue to play an essential role. But it's really up to us in the legislature, ideally not to depend on private actors and nonprofits to do the work that we need to do, which is to change the law to protect everyone.
So as part of that conversation then during the budget, meaning make sure there's enough funding, say for the tenant protection unit or the nonprofit legal services that help people, say, navigate housing court or help homeowners refinance to avoid foreclosure, is that something that needs to get additional funding come April 1?
Absolutely. I think that coming out of, hopefully coming out of, but certainly as we've most recently seen an era of austerity under the former governor, this is an opportunity for us to abundantly fund the programs that we need. And it's not limited to housing by any means, but it absolutely includes guaranteed housing for people across the state. And that does mean TPU agency resources like that. But additionally, you know, legislation like Good Cause Eviction, it doesn't have a fiscal impact. Mm-hmm. But we really need to not only be looking at Good Cause, but as you mentioned before, we passed laws in 2019 that aren't always being adequately enforced because of the lack of resources that were put into enforcement. And that's what I hear in particular from tenant, landlord, attorneys, housing attorneys, all the time, is that the laws, yes, the law could probably always be stronger, but one of their main complaints is a lack of enforcement of the existing law.
Well, we've been speaking with State Senator Julia Salazar. She is a Brooklyn Democrat. Senator, thank you so much for making the time and for visiting us in our humble abode.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by Destiny USA. Shopping, dining, and entertainment all in one location. For more information, go to www.destinyusa.com.